I pull the picture of John up in my phone and show it to the bald guy with the tentacles. He looks at the picture of John, handsome John. The guy with the tentacles slinks away from me. His shoulders drop. "Those types all look the same to me," he says. "No," I say. "I promise you, this guy is a good guy. He's obsessed with the Dunwich Horror, and I'm pretty sure he's here." Tentacles doesn't mask his disappointment. I like him for it. There's nothing rude about it. I tell Tentacles I like his costume, and he smiles. "If you don't find your fella, I'll just be over there by the elder things." I thank Tentacles, and I'm alone again. The food at Tenley's must have been a mirage because I feel empty inside, outside of myself. I get back in the elevator and go on a few rides, the way I ride the subway in New York, staring at my warbled reflection, imagining the doors opening, imagining John being there. "Chloe," he would say, "I'm so sorry." People in the elevator crack up over a joke I don't get. I don't speak this language. I don't belong. The lobby is still a madhouse thick with people, same as it was before. I hold my breath and my purse and I search the lobby. Every tiny sofa, every little crowd, every line, everywhere. He isn't here. But I can't shake this feeling that he is. It's no different than the phone calls. A woman taps me on the shoulder. She wants me to take a picture of her and her weirdo posse. "Sure," I say, hoping I don't sound too obsequious. These people are the opposite of New York. They're so present, so fully engaged, not charging ahead, not hell-bent on making that train or that light. I forgot about peace, about what it's like to have everything you want, your needs met. The woman who asked me to take the picture, her name is Marjorie. She met her husband here at Necronomicon 3 years ago, and she laughs. "He should be the one taking the picture, but who knows where he is? So much to see." Her ring sparkles, small. Marjorie and her friends from the internet, from the weekend, they squish in together. They don't have to be encouraged to go cheek to cheek. They're adjusting their hats, their cloaks. I've never felt so alone in my life. "Honey," she says, "we're ready when you are." I apologize for being in outer space and I hold up her phone. "Say Cthulhu." They speak in unison and they weren't expecting that. "You guys," I say, "let me take another for safety. I want to make sure everyone's in here." They tell me they want to make a pyramid, and I tell them it's a great idea. People are gathering around us, clapping. I'm the photographer, an observer. I look around. I get used to the reality that I'm not going to find John, that I came here alone and I'm invading all this togetherness. I can never tell anyone about this day. I'll pretend I got my Shoggoths in Bloom t-shirt at a thrift store. Soon, the Lovecrafters are in formation. There are 3 vertical rows of them in total, 4 on the bottom, 2 in the middle, and Marjorie the bride on top, arms raised in a V. I take pictures and a video, and I promise myself to find a community when I get back to New York, but I know I won't. Marjorie climbs down. Her cheeks are red. She's hugging the others, promising to send them pictures. I want to leave. I need to leave. But I can't interrupt her. She's too happy. I zoom in on the last picture I took. One girl is growling. One guy is squinting, smiling so much that you can't see his eyes. Another guy is channeling rage, but it comes off as funny. Another girl's face is full of dread. Maybe she's afraid of falling, being crushed. Or maybe it's just the blues that come when the dance is almost over, when the last song is playing. But her face makes me feel better. My love isn't real, But this love isn't real either. This isn't every day for these people. Their real lives don't compare to this weekend. They never will. Just beside the sad girl, in the background, there is a man. You can only see him because the automatic doors in the lobby are open. He's outside. His hands are in his pockets. I know someone who used to do that. I am looking for someone who used to do that. My feet dig into the floor, into the carpet, and I expect the floor to crack open because that's him. I'd know him a mile away, and I know him 50 feet away. He's older. He has a beard. But I drew those eyes until my own eyes were watering. I know the way it feels when those eyes are on me, and that is this feeling I haven't had in so long. To be loved, looked at, treasured. I wasn't crazy to come here after all. There is a happy ending. There is a thing called fate, a balance to all this missing. The zing of that jingle that brought us together. Alex Interiors, you're never alone. It's him. It's him. I scream his name. John! He turns. And I see the moment he sees me. The way his eyes widen. The way he freezes in place. He recognizes me. He does. And I start to run. I scream for Marjorie and I throw her phone at her. She calls after me. Go get him, Shoggoth. I run like a Shoggoth if a Shoggoth runs fast, tripping through the lobby, toward those automatic doors that looked closer in the picture. Time is passing. It had already passed by the time I noticed him. The doors open again, they close again. The town car that was out front is gone, and the doors sense me coming, and they open, and then I'm outside screaming his name. But he's gone. I stand here not crying. Not saying anything, fully absorbing the horror, more horrible than any of these costumes, these elaborate creatures with their weird names. No, this is worse. Being seen, being left, the awareness of it. I remember when my grandmother found out she had Alzheimer's. The worst thing isn't the disease, Chloe. It's knowing that you have it, that it will slowly eat you. That's the worst thing about any bad thing in the world, the knowing. And if you can get a handle on that, you can get through anything. Consciousness is the monster, and it wins. The valet approaches. A frisky older man with an obvious red toupee. So many people here could be characters in a dream.
Little Miss Lovecraft, he says, grinning. Did you need a taxi, or is one of these monsters going to get you where you need to go?
In the taxi, the driver asks if I'm going to the train station, and I nod, yes. It's a mostly empty train, and I have a whole row. When we clear the tunnel, we have reception again. I hold my phone the whole way home. It doesn't ring once. I paint monsters in my mind, but none of them grab onto me the way he does. From the inside out, in perpetuity. 1 year later.
Eggs. I don't ride a bicycle. It's been a sticking point at various times in my life. As a kid, I preferred my feet on the ground. But you can get away faster, said my buddy Stevie. And it's one of those moments I can remember in my gut, in my eyes, crystal clear. Because I remember being 9 years old and knowing that I would be a cop. That I wasn't interested in getting away with anything. Lo shrugged it off the first time I told her that little story. Well, she said. Your dad was a police officer, so he influenced you, pushed you. That's not so much a gut feeling as it is a growing awareness of what was put in your gut. And then she wrapped spaghetti around her fork and called it pasta. Women. I let her think she was right, but she was wrong. I have a strong gut. While I might have inherited it from my dad, my gut is mine alone. You can't expect someone else to be a part of it, to validate it. That's what makes it a gut. It's the reason I know that I don't belong on a bicycle. In my gut, I know nothing good will ever happen to me with my legs straddling that little seat. And you honor a gut the way you do a ghost, a tradition. Today I'm going to do that by heading back to that damn Lovecraft gathering, going to pop a Zantac for the damn twist in my belly that snakes around my backside a little more all the time, and just do it. And I'm taking it easy. I'm going in calm. It's almost a good thing that I feel a little weak. I'm not firing on all cylinders. I have zero expectations of anything happening today. I'm just going for the hell of it. After all, there have been exactly zero noteworthy fatal heart attacks in young people in the area in the past year. Nobody sporting an I Am Providence hat has been spotted at any crime scene. I don't talk about him on the job. I don't think about him on the job. The beard. But he's still in my gut. When you're a gut person, there's an actual digestion process where you finish with someone. Shit them out. I'm not done with the beard. Peggy, she says, fast on her feet into the kitchen, the refrigerator. What are you doing? Heating up pasta. Well, don't stand at the microwave. That's bad for you. She slams a cabinet. Slow down, Lo. You're making my head spin. She rolls her eyes. Sorry. Lo is different lately. I'm still not used to her with her new hair. Shorter, barely reaches her shoulders. That hair is her way of punishing me. It's 3 years now. 3 years since I've seen my son. If she didn't care so much about looking normal for her students, she'd probably shave it all off. I take the pasta out of the microwave, and she grabs the bowl. Eggie, you have your physical today. You can't eat before a physical. I almost forgot, I say. An outright lie. I canceled it last week. I bailed on my last appointment, too. Lo has been on me to go. The twinge in my side, the burn when I piss. But that's called getting old. I don't need some doctor to tell me that. She waves at the steam. And anyway, who eats spaghetti for breakfast? It's pasta, I say. The little shells from last night. The old Lo was careful with her words. Short hair Lo has no patience. She isn't as tedious. I miss her tedium. But then marriage is change. I'm different, too. We had one of those fights 6 months ago, a real sit-down kind of fight, where she flat-out told me that I had to close the boxes once and for all. You can't see your son? Fine. She sucked in air. But that doesn't mean you can sit up here doing whatever it is you do, just making yourself crazy. She blew it out hard. I promised her I was done. And it's true, I'm not out there looking for the beard, same way I haven't written to any of the autism doctors in ages. But of course, you never stop being you. I started Lovecraft, reading about him, just because of that hat. I Am Providence. The other night, there we were, me with a biography of Lovecraft, Lo reading a story by one of her kids. Edward Softly, I said. Who? Lovecraft. That's one of his fake names. Pen names. Same difference. No, she said. A fake name is something you use to get away with something. A pen name has a creative purpose. Our conversation ended then. Thunk. We're growing apart. We pretend that I'm reading about him because she likes him, but we both know. You know what your spouse is doing. Like her hair. She knows how much I love it, the feel of it in a ponytail. We got this thing growing between us, this quiet lie. We pretend that she's not mad at me, that I'm not looking for an I Am Providence hat every time we walk into a grocery store, into a movie theater. Hell, it's part of why I even go to the movies half the time. Sometimes I think we're just two kids waiting for some outside force to smack us, call us out. She pours the sauce in my bowl back into the jar. What am I going to do with you? She asks. You know if you eat, they can't do a lot of the tests, and you still have to pay for the appointment. I'm sorry, Lo. Lately, she is no longer playful when she says, what am I going to do with you? She means it. She's contemplating her options, and I have nothing to do but stand here. Eggie, she says, you got to be more on top of things. I can't tell her how wrong she is. I'm very much on top of things. I canceled the appointment for my physical when I realized it was on the same day as the main event at the Lovecraft Festival. How's that for on top of things? I expect something to happen today. Something big. Not in the reasonable way, in the gut way. Thank God for you, Lolo. I kiss her little head. She breaks away from me. Eyes first, like two skates, rolling away. The lobby of the Biltmore never changes, thank God, and I'm canvassing, calmly, a far cry from the way I was last year going bonkers over that squeaky door. This is gentle police work. I could never get in trouble for smiling at people at random, interrupting their conversations about Glug and Dagon. And in my cheeriest voice, I ask if they wouldn't mind telling me if they've seen this guy around. And they say, yes. They're yes people, the Lovecraft people. And then I show them the picture of the beard, the security camera picture from the falafel. The terrible picture. Grainy, blurry. So far, there hasn't been a bite. One kid said, this is a joke, right? I almost smacked him. No. This festival is a joke. But I don't really believe that. If anything, I'm the joke. These people, their passion is real. The elevator dings and I take it up the one flight. Imagine what the doc would have to say about that laziness. There are hordes of people here, willing students, volunteering to sit and be lectured. Imagine having that kind of passion. But none of them knows the beard. I flop into a wingback chair just inside the door to the main event. That door they closed because they're about to get started. You can feel the energy, the love for Dr. Wu. Back again this year to expound on Lovecraft's monsters. A smarter man would go into that room, maybe learn a thing or two. But Dr. Wu isn't the kind of doctor who can cure autism, and my attention span is shot these days. Why hasn't anyone died? Lo texts me, how did it go? I write back, I'm afraid it looks like you're stuck with me. She writes back, good. Eat. XX. I pocket my phone. Those words are already haunting me. Good. Eat. She'd never leave me, would she? Dr. Wu pounds her fist on a podium as if she knows there's someone out there not listening. Yes, she says. Yes, H.P. Lovecraft described death as merging with the infinite blackness. So let's pause on that. The infinite blackness. What else does that sound like to you? Something murky and infinite? A pin-thin pixie boy in the back row screams, Love! People laugh. They exchange looks, hold hands. Dr. Wu keeps on about the idea of death and love being built upon disintegration of the individual and the individual interests. I think of me and Lo, her life in the kitchen, my boxes in my room. I must change. We must change. Dr. Wu wants to end on a light, dark note. As H.P. said, one could drown in 06 just as easily as in 05 and 04. So everybody, thank you for coming. Don't drown today. Drown next year so we can all get together again. And all hands in the room come together. Thunder. Love. There is clapping and whistling. Only a couple of these kids know how to whistle. And they chant, woo-woo, and I'm happy I came today. I'm happy I can be here on my feet, thinking that I have a new feeling in my gut, just as strong as my feeling about the beard. It's simple. If I'm sneaking around like this on a secret hunch next year, Lo won't be with me. It's a scary realization, and I could act on it. I could leave now. But my gut. My gut. I take my badge out and move around the line, all the way back to Dr. Wu's table. I stand off to the side while she poses with a fan. She smiles for the camera. I sense a police presence, she says. Are you here to arrest me? The fanboy, getting his picture taken, screams, I love you, Dr. Wu. She smiles. I love you too, Harry. When he leaves, she motions to the helper gal with the lanyard around her neck to put things on hold. She rolls her sleeves up and comes over to the side. Dr. Lin Wu, she says, extending her hand. We shake. You realize you just told that young man that you love him. She nods. There's never enough love in the world. But do you, though? She looks at me. Yes, she says. I love my readers. She says this as if these people belong to her, which they don't. Take a look around, lady. This is Lovecraft land. She raises an eyebrow. Of course she can do that. I can't. Neither can Lo. Are you a reader? No, I say. No, I'm here on business. She smiles. I was kidding. You have to forgive me. I get worked up at these things, you know. I spend so much time alone, and then I get here to this, and the love and the energy. Woo! I tell her it's okay, and I reach into my jacket breast pocket, and she clamps her hand over her mouth and gasps, Am I being served? No, I say, newly embarrassed. No, it's nothing like that. I unfold the picture once, twice, and then I press it with my hands. Sorry, I mumble. Been a long day. They should get you boys some iPads. I smile. They did. She laughs hard. Too hard. Well, I say, it's a terrible picture, and it's a long shot on a lot of levels, but I'm wondering if you might recognize the man in this picture. She sets the photo on the table and looks at it the way you look at a Monet. See, she says, if you had an iPad, I could zoom in. I reach for the photo. I can let you go back to your fans. Readers, she says, and yes. Yes, he is a reader. Oh, yes. 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 I take out my pen, my notepad. You saw him today? No, she says. It was last year. He missed my lecture, but talked to me outside the hotel. Here. He was here, and I missed him. And of course I did. I watched the door to the lecture room, not the hotel. And I even stopped doing that when I thought I had him, when I dragged that poor kid from Wareham, Massachusetts, out of here. He was sweet, she says. Seemed very down. I believe we talked about the Dunwich Horror. I can't remember exactly, you know, it's a lot of little conversations. What I remember is the feeling. And he was wounded? Bruised? She shakes her head. No, not at all. Fuck. Dr. Wu, the man in this picture was savagely beaten. If he was here, he would have been covered in bruises. Well, he must have special healing powers. She says, patronizing, because he was here and he was fine. And you're sure this was him? You would swear on it? She smiles. I love my readers, she says. But you've seen them. You understand why the man in this picture, stood out. Look at those cheekbones. He was striking. That's the word for it. Striking. She's so authoritative, so sure. And I doubly remember all this because while I was talking to this poor guy, I got a bloody nose. I mean, I had this wave of nausea. I almost passed out. These conferences are long days, she sighs. Did he tell you anything about himself? Anything that might help us locate him? His name? Anything like that? She smiles at me. Officer, I meet hundreds of people a year. She looks at her crowd. In fact, did you consult a physician after your nosebleed? No, she says. One minute that boy was here, my nose was bleeding, and I thought I was getting sick, fluttery, and the next minute he was gone. He was gone and I was fine. As I said, it was a long day. I scribbled those words in my notepad. He was gone and I was fine. Officer, she says, he didn't do anything wrong, did he? I close up my notepad. I wish her the best with her readers, and I give her my card. You know, I say, in case that nose starts bleeding again. Dr. Wu goes back to her podium and mingles with her fans, hugging, posing, signing, leaning in. He was gone, and I was fine. The words loom in my gut. Loud, steady.
John. I have friends now. Sort of. About a year ago, I found this podcast. These two guys from New Zealand, Kiwis. Their names are Guy and Tim, and all they do is analyze grown-ups too. It's the greatest feeling to hear them talk. They notice all the stuff I notice. Like how you can't tell what the director wants you to see. The podcast made me realize why the movie was relaxing in that way. The lack of direction or something, like how it is with The Dunwich Horror and Roger's Letter, me not knowing where to focus, what I'm supposed to see, what to do. I've listened to every episode 3 or 4 times. It's not interactive, but sometimes I'll talk to them as if it's the three of us at a bar. I hold on to the wheel. I half expect them to respond. To say my name. And it's a good thing to find people you have something in common with, even if you can't know them. It's like all those Lovecraft people. My phone rings. The caller is unknown. My heart pounds, weaponizing. Ka-kung, ka-kung. I pull over. I put the car in park. I cough. Hello? I haven't spoken out loud in a few days. I have a New Zealand accent that I must have picked up from the podcast. There is no voice on the other end of the line. So I say hello again and again. I sound like a freaking Kiwi. But it isn't Chloe. It isn't my parents who magically tracked me down with a detective or an internet whiz. It isn't Professor Meany. I thought he might call because this morning I snapped. I sent him a cryptic email from my Theo Ward account. Dear Mr. Meany, I have reason to believe that you can help me. It's a life or death situation. I'm not being dramatic. I'm not a student. I'm not trying to get your attention. I'm trying to get your help. And there is no money involved. I just need you to hear me out. You know who this is. But it's not Meany. He probably thought my note was spam. The call is just a robot trying to clean my carpets. I scream into the phone. I have wood floors, asshole! Just like that, I sound like me again. I should have known it was no one. It's been a year of no one, nothing. Dr. Lin Wu's words felt like the truth. I stopped calling Chloe. I didn't delete her number or anything like that, but not calling her became a thing I do, the way some people go to the gym. And she's different now. She uses more hashtags. Hashtag Saturday Vibes. Today she was at Sparrow's Pizza in Midtown. She wrote, "Can't come here without thinking of Michael Scott." We never watched The Office together. She's probably watching it with some new guy. Some new friend. I still keep up with her art online. She's making eyes, but they're wilder now, almost monstrous, as if something upset her, something irked her. In the media, she says it's about growing older, wiser, more cynical, leaning into that darkness and facing the unknown of your future self, realizing this is it, how it is now. I read every interview, and then I close my eyes and remember seeing her at Lovecraft. The memory doesn't fade. I won't let it. I open up the paper, and there's an article about Dr. Meany. He's sponsoring a science program at Hope High School. There's a picture of him with a bunch of public school kids, and they're all smiling. There's a look in people's eyes when they have so much ahead. The prom, their futures, the science they're doing with this big shot professor. I study myself in the mirror. My blank eyes, my puffy face from not talking so much. I don't have that future sparkle. When I smile, my eyes stay the same. I don't look happy. I look dead. Hope Street is darker than normal because of the mist, low and thick. I turn on my brights. I slam on the brakes. There are hands, two of them, on the hood of my car. Now there's laughter, and the mist clears enough where I can see more. The arms attached to the hands, bottoming out in an electric pink sports bra. And when I see what house I'm in front of, I realize who it must be. Crane Camaflori. It turns out that she's young, and she has frizzy red hair. She's breathing heavy. She's closer now, leaning into the passenger window. She's catching her breath, laughing at the mist, how thick it is, how blinding. I smell her sweat. She laughs.
Oh my God, this must be you. We meet at last, for real. It's Theo, right?
She bends over and I see her boobs, the space between them, the darkness. Her mouth never stops moving. She says she's been wanting to meet me. She yawns.
Sorry, she says. I just got back from L.A., and I have jet lag up the wazoo.
I tell her it's okay, and she peers into my car. She hears the Kiwis talking. I forgot to shut them off.
Is that a podcast?
She asks. It's these guys in New Zealand, I say, surprised that I can speak. They talk about the movie Grown Ups 2.
Amazing,
she says, and she drums her hands on the side of my car.
Do you ever listen to How Did This Get Made?
I shake my head no.
Theo,
she says, as if my name is a new shirt she's trying on.
Theo, you would love this podcast. It's literally just people being like, how did this movie get made? It's amazing. And it's not mean, you know? It's coming from this place of love.
She pulls a red pen from her pocket.
You have to give me your email so I can send it to you.
And then she's writing my Theo email address on her arm. I have a friend, I think. She yawns. She's out here looking for her disappearing cat.
His name is Muse Frontman, she says, and he is not a homebody.
I laugh and she keeps going. She says she didn't get into grad school like she wanted. She switched majors at Providence College because she wanted to study the brain because the brain is where it's at.
But that was no good either, she says. The science was too dense, too confusing. I mean, talk to me about sodium and chloride and I am like, okay, but what about us?
I say the only word I have left. Yeah. The sound of her voice is so different than the sound of a voice on TV. The Kiwis. Their voices are for each other. Her voice is just for me right now. She's still talking about our changing brains
how the technology is morphing, and how the sodium and the chloride are outdated modules. I'm not sure what she means, but she goes on. Yeah, I say. Yeah. She has so much to say to me, as if jogging and traveling unearthed all these things, and she has to get them out of her system. She wanted to learn about computers because we are computers. That's where the sodium and chloride are less relevant, and our brains are more like these. She points to the phone strapped to her bicep. Yeah, I say. Yeah. She tells me about how exciting it is to study computers and obviously practical in terms of a career, but majorly stressful. It's why she takes Zoloft, which is how she became obsessed with psych meds. She wants to figure out an honest way to think about your brain and your computer and your essence and the possibility of there being a soul, of all these things becoming one, the overwhelming burden of a body. She took a poetry workshop, and she says it changed her mind. It made her think, we're all machines. You put people together, the same people every week, you all become one. There's a hum when seven people are in a small place, thinking about the same thing, together, you know? Like sodium and chloride can break out of your mind and go into someone else's, you know? Yeah, I say. Yeah. I wish she knew about me. I wish I could tell her about my bad heart. Transfer everything I know, everything I don't know, every word of the Dunwich Horror letter into her mind. But I can't tell her. I would sound crazy, and the fog is clearing. Her bumper sticker breaks through the mist. Keep Providence weird. Every single MFA program, Flory says, laughing, shrill, sad. I think she's had a bad year, too. What do you even do with that? Rejected from every single poetry program I applied to. If I were Sylvia Plath, I would just jump in the oven, you know? Don't do that. She looks to the left and winces. Speaking of poetic injustice, my oven is broken. She looks at me suddenly. Too dark? No, I say. Impossible. She laughs a little, a less disturbing kind of giggle. She says she's working at this law firm, pro bono suits against Big Pharma. They're noble, which means I can sleep, she says. Or maybe that's just the Zoloft. A light rain falls. She keeps talking. I listen. And I feel better just being here, learning about her poems, her rationalizations. Pain is art, and art is pain, she says, smacking her thigh. No matter how many successful fuckwits swear otherwise. So this has to be leading up to something amazing, and maybe next year, maybe I'll have better material. I'll get in. I'll be sweating over where to go, and we'll laugh at this moment. She cracks her knuckles, and I imagine her fingers in my mouth. Yeah, I say. Yeah. She laughs and pulls back. We made the sun come out. And then something shifts. Her shoulders roll a bit. Her voice drops. Sorry for going off. I guess you can tell I don't get out enough lately. Me too, I say, willing the saliva to stop filling my mouth. Same. She smiles. And now I have to go in because I can't be late to work and I can't show up in a sports bra. She laughs. Next time it's your turn to say too much and be the stereotypical millennial narcissist, okay? Okay, I say. It's a deal. She turns and walks away, and I watch her on the grass. She used to be so dainty and barefooted. Now she is in sneakers. She stomps. She's stronger. And then it hits me. That was a lot of talking. I was there. I was feeling things, wanting to act on those feelings. My heart was revving up, but it didn't hurt her at all. She's alive. Her nose isn't bleeding. She wasn't wheezing, wasn't saying, "What's wrong with me?" I didn't make her dizzy. I didn't kill her. Maybe this is different because Crane Camaflori is different. Medicated, with bright, heavy sneakers. Maybe she's like those coats that firemen wear, the coats that don't catch fire. Maybe she's just different. Or maybe it's more like she said. Maybe this year was lonely and long, but maybe my body was busy recovering. Maybe I'm different. She looks over her shoulder.
Wanna come in?
I turn off the car and dig my hands into my pockets. I do. I have to know. I have to test it. Want to and have to. We're never as united as they are right now as I walk toward her door, into her house. I look around the living room. The records on the coffee table, the playlist on low, the pillow with Jack Nicholson's big smiling face, the poster of the periodic table of elements, right under a photo of Janet Jackson torn out of a magazine and stuck up there with gum. She's dancing. Dancing on the periodic table of elements, because there it is, the wonder of life, how we get from the periodic table to Janet Jackson. I look at all her fish tanks, her fish bowls. Wow, I say. How many fish do you have?
I'm not about numbers, Flory tells me. My babies inspire me. I'm surrounded by life, and fish die constantly. So there's death, too. But that's poetry, you know?
She sits on Jack Nicholson's face and pats the sofa next to her. Carefully, I sit down.
And Muse frontman keeps me company, she says, then laughs. But he's a cat. I mean, I'd much prefer to hear about you, Theo.
She kicks off her sneakers and stretches out her legs and crosses them at the ankle.
Let's start with your job. Do you like it?
Yeah, I say. That word, my word. I deliver the papers. She laughs.
I know, she says. And why do you deliver the papers?
I don't know, I say. Feeling boring, feeling bad. Here I am. I still can't quite look at her. I'm worried that I'll see blood coming out of her nose, that I would kill her. But I can't resist it right now. The talking, the listening, telling her about the telegraph, trying not to stare too hard at her nostrils, her pupils.
Cool,
she says. She pulls her legs away from the table in one swift move. She crosses her legs and tickles my calf with her big toe. I feel it all over, under, in the small of my back. So, how did you come up with the name Muse Frontman? Is that your favorite band?
No,
she says with a smile, like she loves this question, like she always wants boys to ask, but they never do.
I got him at the shelter. Well, it's more like he got me. We made a deal. We decided to pick up People magazine, name him after the first two words we saw.
I smile, thinking of Pedro.
You're nice.
She lowers her chin.
Theo? I think you should kiss me.
Kiss. I've never kissed a girl. Never. She is in the room. Crane, comma, Flory. She is in the room, and she's not fainting, not bleeding. She's different. I'm different. And then I do it. Kissing is so different than I expected. Her mouth on mine. The air we share, our mouths closed, the cave, the inside of a girl. I've always known girls have tongues, lips, but I've never felt it. The wetness, this miniature whale swooshing from her mouth into mine, swimming, the wanting, the click-clack of our teeth. I keep thinking it. This is kissing. This is it. And I'm fixed. Fixed. I kissed. Kissed. I know why you can't do it to yourself. Because you need the surprise of another person's tongue. Crane, comma, Flory. I kissed her. And she's alive. She's not fainting, not bleeding. I kiss her a lot and her cheeks are flushed. She bites her lip. She talks so much and then after she finishes saying something good about us, about this, she says, you know what I mean? And then no matter what she is saying, I say, yeah. Kissed. Fixed. She says she knows she comes on strong and her friends tell her she should try to back off and play it cool. But look how long we waited, she says. You know, I liked you before I saw your face. You're so tender. The guy before you, he didn't close the bags on the papers. But then you come along and you tie every paper with a twisty thing. You use red and green ones at Christmas. You. Yeah, I say. Yeah. I watch her nostrils closely. I make sure there's no blood coming. She says she likes how bold I am, how unafraid I am to look her in the eye. I look at one of her posters, like the bumper sticker. Keep Providence weird. I'm normal now. Keep Providence normal. There is such a story I could tell you about that sign, she says. I didn't realize she was watching me, didn't realize I was staring. But it's more of a first date story. It's my big closing number at the end of the date. You know, the story I tell to make it clear that I unequivocally rock. I watch her nostrils. Do you feel okay? She smiles. I feel so okay, she says. I love how considerate you are. I love that I don't feel this compulsion to spin you some yarn about how I never do this. There's this innocence about you, and it brings out the wild in me, and I love that we got here this fast and that you don't even know my first date stories. Can we even call this a date? Yeah, I say. We can call it whatever you want. Crane, comma, Flory puts her hand on my arm. We can do anything in the world right now, she says. We can eat or not eat. We can sit here or go out. We can talk or not talk. We can mess around or not mess around. I have some pot. I have some old beers and some new vodka. I have time. I love this hour, you know. We can decide what this is, if it's morning or night. When else can you say that, you know? She falls back against the sofa. She's a nice person. Maybe the nicest person I ever met. There's something crazy about her in the fun way. Like when Roger, when he was our sub, told us that if Van Gogh were walking around, everyone would run away because he had no ear. But if he was holding his paintings, they would be nice to him. She's holding her paintings, and she's good at it. And now she's thirsty. What about you? She says. Are you thirsty? Yeah, I say. Sure. She returns with plastic cups of water, biting her lip. That took forever because I stepped in gum, she says, giggling. In my house. How great is it that I can tell you that? And I know you aren't going to judge me. I feel bad for Crane, comma, Flory. I'm glad she has Muse frontman. I bet there's some guy out there who'd want to sit on the couch with her and take pictures of the cat. I bet there is someone for everyone. I'm drinking her water and it tastes like soap. I wonder what she's going to do when she realizes I'm going to leave her. I wish I could tell her it's not because of her nonstop talking and the gum on the floor and the hair on her toes, which I'm noticing now. Tomorrow, we should go out in the world, she says. Like, do something totally random. Do you want to go to Seekonk and just be in Seekonk? We can even take Muse if he ever comes home. I have a leash. Yeah, I say. We could go to Seekonk. But in my mind, I'm already gassing up my car, already gone, already on my way to Chloe.
Eggs. Right after we put Chucky in the place they said is safest and best for him, we had to go right back to work. We didn't have any more time off because we'd used it all up dealing with him in our home, the place that was unsafe and worst. It was good for Lo, the distraction of other kids, many of whom would walk her to the car, want to know more. But it was no good for me. I was ferocious in those days, scowling at anyone who said hello, slamming the coffee pot in the kitchen at the station. One day we had bagels brought in and they gave us plastic knives. I lost my temper and sliced my thumb open. I still have a scar, a tiny mark. You'd only know it was from a knife if I told you. Lo knows, she kisses it sometimes, says I wouldn't have a scar if I'd put vitamin E on it, but then she also says my thin skin is part of my charm. Such a Pisces. She doesn't know that I wanted a scab. Not a scar, per se, I didn't think it through, but I wanted a little project, a place to put my energy. I picked that scab and watched it bleed. I fought my body as it tried to close that wound, lunging at it with my sharp fingernail. It made me so aware of our bodies, how they're on our side. Your skin working so hard to hold it all together 24/7. And there I was, picking at it, fighting it. Me. It's been a minute and I can't figure it out, how the hell the beard healed up so fast. And it's a load to carry because anyone would say I'm spinning my wheels. Say that the haughty Lovecraft gal was just one of those people who can't say I'm wrong. But in my gut, it was the beard. In her gut, too. You can smell conviction. And that just brings me back to where I am right now, middle of the night, every night, up in bed, wondering how. How do you heal that fast? I know how you stop yourself from healing, but how do you expedite it? Did he immerse himself in a tub of vitamin E? Is that a thing you can do? I'm awake when the call comes at 5 a.m. It's a woman on the east side. Dead. Dead at 24. 24. Lowe rolls over. I'd make you something, but I'm so wiped out. Of course, I say, meaning it, fearing it. The end of love. A year ago, she'd be up in her robe, yawning, cracking eggs, overcooking them. Of course. I take a cupcake out of the freezer. I heat up water and I steep my tea. 15 minutes. One woman. 24. It happened here on Wickenden by the gas station. A sprawl of an intersection, the highway above looming like the highway in a Bruce Springsteen song, The Road Out of Here. Her name is Jillian Farber, and she dropped dead by an out-of-service pump. She was here on foot, no car. The guy in the gas station nods. He'd seen her around now and then. This means she's a user, a regular. He was probably talking shit about her yesterday, but now that she's gone, he's possessive. The loss is his. She ever with anyone? I ask. Sometimes, he says, I guess. There are other people here, cops, EMTs. I lean in. You ever see her with anyone with a beard, say about 6'2"? Anyone like that here when she passed? The guy shrugs. Maybe, he says. She's just one of those people, you know. She's around. Maybe isn't no. And I head outside. Stacy's here, back after leave with baby number 6. Richie. Healthy Richie. The joke around the station is that Richie is going to be a quarterback because he looks like Tom Brady. I will never be captain because I will never agree that a baby resembles Tom Brady. Eggs? She doesn't even look at me. Says my name like I'm a dog, leaving me with no choice but to walk to her. Woof woof. Stacy, I say, faking it. Good to have you here. She wants to know what I was doing in there. I stammer and sweat. I was just asking the guy for his POV. She glares. I said, what were you doing? I am steady. I got his statement. Nothing more to it. She nods. But we already got a statement. She looks at me in that pitying way. They found track marks on her toes, she says. Eggie, you look like hell, and there's no work for you to do here. You know better. You saw her backpack full of all the tagged jewelry. Junkie thief, plain as day. Get some sleep. She watches my face fall. I never got good at covering my disappointment. Another reason I don't visit my son. They say he can't process emotion, but what if they're wrong? What if I walked in there and looked at him and he saw the sadness on my face? What if he felt it? What if I went in there and ruined his day? Druggies die of drugs, Stacy says, and I mean it. Get some sleep. She pats my back in a way that reminds me that she's a mother. My eyes land on the backpack I didn't open. I did miss that backpack. The sun is up and the van is here and the beard is not here. Never was. I think of all the nights up, all the boxes, all the wondering. Who is the beard? How did he heal his wounds? How did he fix his nose? How does he kill all these people? How does he slip away? Those sound like the questions of a crazy person, a ghost hunter, a conspiracy theorist, an absentee father who won't even visit his own son, who doesn't even properly fuck his wife on a regular basis anymore, a secretive man, a man who keeps files on dead people, people who died because people die, not because some beard killed them. In the gas station, I pick up 2 jelly donuts. Stacy accepts my apology. She eats the donut and licks her fingers. How's Lou? She asks. Great, I say. Because I'm a liar and liars lie. Better than ever.
John. The miracle of the internet is that I am in my car, knowing exactly where to go, what time to be there. Chloe has an opening at the Flair Gallery in Chelsea. I like the idea of there being an audience for our reunion. This is why people have big weddings, because sometimes you want everyone to see that things worked out for you. I love the idea that I will be the guy marching into the gallery to get the girl, and she'll come running to me to get me. Kissed. Fixed. That's my plan. Just walk up to her and kiss her. Say nothing. Do what I should have done a long time ago. I'm making good time, and it's mostly a straight shot on 95. I drive faster than I should, but then again, I am kissed, fixed. I don't know how it happened, and I don't need to know. It happened. Kissed, fixed. I don't think anything could hurt me right now, and I'm checking my phone to see how long it's going to take when the guy in back of me beeps. I was veering into his lane. I wave. Sorry. It's the longest drive of my life. I wish there was a way you could zap yourself so you didn't have to be in the moment that leads up to the moment. Your life. It feels like Connecticut lasts forever and everyone is trying to get through it, and I'm never going to get there, and then it happens. I can't pinpoint a specific moment. I just become aware that there were more woods than concrete until suddenly there weren't. I am here, almost. I am in New York, the beginning of it. The flat-top buildings are standing there staring at me, waiting. Chloe. I grab my phone. I've never called her from the state of New York, so I dial the number. I wait for her to answer. She sounds short of breath, nervous. Hello? Hello? I don't tell her it's me, and she doesn't say my name this time. I hang up. Her voice made it real what's coming next. The big hug. The big kiss. Kiss? I'm a kid again. I look at people in the cars around me, and none of them are perking up. Mostly they look tired. I roll down the window and start beeping my horn in the happy way, and people are looking at me like I'm nuts, but I smile at them. I pump my fist. I'm alive. They smile back. I am still contagious, but now it's in the good way. What kills me the most is the sheer volume of people. They're everywhere. You see them in the windows of the skyscrapers. They're coming up from the subway below. They're in cars, beeping. They're on the street, not looking at you, not saying, excuse me. They're homeless or they're in suits. They're dressed up like Chloe said they would be. And then they're sloppy in Yankees jerseys. They're all so different, and I want them to slow down. I want to slow down. But then it's too late to slow down. I'm here, almost, just one street away from the gallery, and my heart is beating so fast I have to stop. Whew, I have to breathe. I stop cold in front of a bakery that's a deli and a newsstand and a coffee shop, and I've never seen any place that was so many places at once. Someone at a table is eating sushi. I understand why Chloe always said New York is special. I've never seen so much variety. It's like the city encourages you to make your dreams come true, to order the pizza and the tuna roll, and then buy a scratch ticket and a roll of toilet paper, take it all upstairs to this salad bar, more food, and be so awestruck that you almost walk right into a woman storming around with a basket of fresh groceries, a whole eggplant and a newspaper, a quart of milk. She detours so swiftly. People are so good at walking here, at moving. Maybe when you're around this many people, you just don't feel as much. Or maybe you just know what feelings matter. I haven't even seen Chloe yet, but it's as if she's already opening my eyes to the world, the way she always did. Making it seem new again, day after day. It's like I never saw people before, never realized just how big it is, the human race. I watch a guy in all white make an egg sandwich, and he ties it up so fast it's like a magic trick. I go into the deli and order breakfast for dinner, as if I'm a normal New Yorker. I watch the people, the sad faces, the tired faces. I inhale the sandwich. It's the best thing I ever ate. I go up and tell the guy who made it that it's the best thing I ever ate, and he nods. I don't think he speaks English, or maybe he doesn't care. I walk down rickety black and white stairs and go into a tiny bathroom where I splash water on my face. I floss. I pull shards of eggs out of my beard. New Yorkers look so different, yet somehow you can tell that I'm not one of them. Maybe that will change when we kiss. Flair Gallery is halfway down the street, marked by a sandwich board on the sidewalk. This is when my heart starts ticking like a clock on a bomb, when I feel something, when there's a spark, and the alarm sound ringing through me. Alert! Alert! Chloe. But this must be what it's like to be normal, because right now, all I feel is good. Not grabby. I'm in charge of my heart, not Roger. I stand here by the sandwich board and soak it up. The quiet in me. It's like my heart is back to being the heart I was born with. It isn't a weapon anymore. I feel like I did before, like nothing ever happened. It's a circle of life in a good way, a great way. I start walking. My palms are soaking wet and I can't get there fast enough, but I also can't walk slow enough, and then I get there. I am standing in front of the gallery. And it's empty. Empty. The door is propped open and a girl sits on the stoop smoking. The show is in the fucking annex, she says. She blows a smoke ring up to the sky. And the annex is on fucking 34th and Lex. Such bullshit, right? It's like When Harry Met Sally, or any movie, really. The man always has to run through New York to get the girl. So, that's me now, flying down the street the way all superheroes do at some point, if you want to get the girl. I'm running and smiling, and a couple of girls connect their eyes to mine. I can almost feel them thinking, there goes a good one. Now I live here. Somehow, running from Chelsea to 34th and Lex in just 18 minutes makes me a New Yorker. I am not afraid when I arrive, when I see the annex, a tiny little box of a space, almost like a cartoon, one giant garage door, open all the way, people spilling in and out, people drinking wine, music playing, music I don't know. I go in. I see her name on the wall. I see her eyes on all the walls, and then it happens. I see her in a white dress, glittering, flowery shoes on her feet. She exists. She is here. Chloe. She scratches her right ankle with her left foot, shifting the way she did in school. I can't believe I am here. Can't believe we made it this far into the future, into the same room. I want to go to her, but I want to wait. I want to hold on to this sensation of her being within my reach after being so far away from me for so long, in the computer, tiny and still. You think you've seen someone if you've seen them in pictures, but this is a reminder of what more there is. The way she shrugs her shoulders and covers her mouth with her elbow when she coughs, and I see her phone, the phone she's answered when I called. John? A douche art guy bumps into me and he's rude and unapologetic, but he doesn't drop to the floor like Krish. It's more proof things are different now. More evidence that I'm safe. Kissed. Fixed. I get a plastic cup of white wine and watch Chloe work the room. I like her this way. Older. Life makes you better after it makes you worse. I'm calm just being here. She brings out the best in me, even now, when she doesn't know that she's doing anything. I take a step toward her. Another. I'm closer to her. Close enough to see individual strands of her hair swaying as she turns her head. As if she's expecting me. As if she was waiting for me. And maybe she was. Of course she was. She feels me. She feels the pull of my heart. No. Yes. No. I get one tiny moment with the freckles on her face. Some of them new, some old. Those strands of her hair that won't cooperate, like the weapon in my heart. And then I hear all the gasping that's familiar in the worst way. I don't need to look back to know her nose is bleeding, to hear the sound of her body hitting the hard floor. Thunk. And I can't be the one to go over there and give her a Kleenex, kiss her and make it better. I was wrong to come here, and my body lied to me, and I'm not kissed, fixed. I'm still me. I'm still in hell. Outside on the street, I run all the way to the edge of New York City, where it ends in the Hudson River. I pant and I scream at the water. It doesn't scream back.
Chloe, I saw him, felt him. That high school sensation, when I could always sense him nearby, in my heart, that tug of the empty box on my computer when those bubbles would appear. That's why I started to turn around. And then I fainted. Blackout. And now I'm awake and hiding out in the back room of the gallery, and my mother is on the phone. You need to eat more, and you better not be taking Adderall or Coke. There's nothing cute about it, Chloe. It demeans your work, too, to joke about drugs like that. Is that what this is? Drugs? Well, regardless, you need to drink more milk. Do you eat those almonds I send you? And I'm not an anemic or a cokehead. I saw him. I did. I'm drinking water and wiping blood off my knee. The only real thing is the blood, the bruises, the substances inside of us, like paint on the canvas. Proof. I have no proof that I saw John. Your gut is not proof. But your memory is something. Alexandra is back, hovering, offering Kleenex and cocaine. My mother is not stupid. Thanks, Alexandra, I say. Steadying, stepping back into my skin. my life. There's an unspoken thing, and we both know it. I'm off. I've been sliding a bit all year. At first, I would forget about interviews, and then Alexandra would reschedule them. And then I took it to the next level. Actually, could you tell them I'm in work mode right now? No publicity for a few months. And it's all because of him. Because of John. That day he ran out on me changed me. That train ride. I'm not the same. I can't go talking about him to strangers anymore. He saw me. He left me. And it's an important part of being a person. You have to know how to be left. Alexandra knows me. She pats my leg. You got the Johns bad right now, don't you, babe? No, I say, smiling through the lie. I swear I saw him, though. She tucks the Kleenex and Coke into her pocket and checks her phone. Huh, she says. Apparently there's some guy sniffing around. Says he knows you. My heart. Are you serious? She looks at me. Holy fuck, she says. You think it's him? John? We don't know. She is not so cool now. Nervous. Excited. Says I have to be chill and wait, and she goes to get him, and I sit and wait. And then I stand. Nothing is right, but nothing was ever easy with us, and I remember that now. Now that I think he's here, I'm gonna get to hug him. Thank him. For my art. I'm gonna get to talk about him. Talk with him. And I miss that. I haven't been able to talk about John with Marlene in years. She burnt out on the subject in college. My fantasy, she called it. My mom practically hangs up on me if I ask about his parents. I feel whole again, like all the parts of me are condensing into one. The girl who missed him, and the artist who hunts for him, and the woman I could be if I could just get on with it. If he would just get here already. Alexandra texts, sorry, mad crowded. Hang on. I hang on. I wait. And my whole life starts to make sense to me. It becomes a movie with a beginning, a middle, an end. Alexandra's head appears in the crowd, the shock of her white blonde hair. Here it comes. Here he comes. He smiles. He, as in Carrig Burkus. Not John Bronson. I glance at Alexandra and she's making hand gestures. Smoking hot, right? Right. Carrig is still smoking hot. Same as ever. Embracing me. But Carrig is not John. But then, Carrig is here. He tells me I look great and I tell him he looks great. And he is a little drunk, a little rattled, says he's never been to an art thing, and I laugh and tell him it's gonna be okay, and he can't believe I fainted, and I say I never do, except when high school boyfriends show up unexpected. You invited me, he says. His cheeks turn red. I mean, I got a Facebook invite. I didn't mean it like, you know. I smile at him. This is the side of him that John couldn't see. The sweetness. I ask him if anyone else from school is here, and it was a weird thing to say. There is a bump. An awkwardness. I can't mention John. If I do that, Carrig will leave. It's amazing what you can know about a person all these years later. The rules. But we push through. He brings me wine and he buys a painting and he's talking a lot, nervous. He is bashful and cocky. It's hard to keep up. So I bought a place in Tribeca, he says. When someone starts a sentence with "so," he's trying to make it sound casual. But this isn't casual, Carrig being here. It feels so intentional. He cares so much he said so.
You should see my place. I can see the whole city. It's insane.